terrain. She nearly forgot to squeeze the jammer as Tenzint casually opened a vibro-knife and swung it upward, blade sliding between the stormtrooper's helmet and chest plate. He did it so carelessly, she was sure he'd done it before. She scurried to the corpse and saw the grime on the trooper's once pristine armor. Whatever unit she faced was as run down and ragged as the rest of the Empire. Tenzint shrugged and gestured her to go next. A spectrum scope suggested no one immediately inside the observatory entrance. Quell guessed the building contained a single main room and a few closet-sized alcoves. She attached an explosive to the front door and cleared a trail through the dirtweed to the back of the structure, where she sought a ventilation shaft. She found none, waved an increasingly impatient Tenzint over, and allowed him to hoist her to the low roof where she clambered to the telescope. The lens, she was pleased to see, was broken. She withdrew a gas canister from her satchel. She didn't expect it to do much good. Cyclodioxis was invisible, non-lethal, and efficiently neutralized by a stormtrooper's helmet filters. But she dropped the canister into the telescope anyway and listened to it bounce and rattle and smash through the far lens. Then she donned her own respirator and activated the release switch, listening to the calming aerosol hiss. Moments later, someone attempted to open the door. The explosive activated automatically, and the second stormtrooper died with a face full of shrapnel and a charred torso. Tenzint was firing as Quell slid off the roof to the side of the door. She spun, aimed her weapon, and shot two unarmed stormtroopers still attempting to secure their helmets. The remaining soldiers were clad in nightshirts, crawling toward the ruined doorway through the cyclodioxis haze, if they were moving at all. Quell looked into their bloodshot eyes, their cheeks gaunt with malnutrition, and executed them one by one. She found two more asleep on cots in the first alcove, bandaged skin stinking of rot and unguents. She shot these too, ignoring the shaking in her hands and knowing that General Syndulla and Will Lark and maybe even Chasna Chattuck would have done otherwise. They didn't have the secrets she did. When she sensed a presence behind her, she barely thought to move. Instinct saved her from a rifle smashing her scalp. Instead, the heavy barrel smacked her shoulder, pumped her arm full of pain, and she dropped to her knees. She pivoted as fast as she could, hoping to catch her foe by the knees, but she barely tapped white-clad shins. Above her was a stormtrooper, unhelmeted, but wearing a respirator mask. The woman was aiming her rifle at Quell. Quell fell back and fired as her enemy. She felt heat and smelled her own burning hair as a particle bolt impacted to the right of her head. Her pistol pulsed in her hands as she fired wildly. In another instant, the stormtrooper fell forward onto Quell, and Quell lay beneath the corpse, breathing heavily. When she managed to stand, she found Aiden unconscious on a cot in the second alcove. His lips were crusted with blood, and a bruise rendered the left side of his face almost unrecognizable. One of his antenna stalks was extended farther than the other and was bent crookedly. Quell found her eyes growing wet and wiped the moisture away, fearing its interaction with the cyclodioxis gas. She left Aiden where he was and checked the portable computers in the main room. She could access only one. The others were locked or damaged. But all she found were maps of the innermost sections of the Cerberon debris field. She recognized none of it, could make no connection to the CER-952B asteroid or the trap set for Shadow Wing. She laughed, nearly choked, when her first instinct after reviewing the files was to shoot the computer screen. She wondered if that was the way of all troops on the ground, or only the amateur murderers. The droid arrived 5 minutes after the shooting stopped. It hovered over Aiden attentively as the gas cleared and Nath Tenzint flew the freighter closer to the observatory. Between Quell and Tenzint, they managed to carry Aiden without much jostling. They set him gently in one of the bunks in the freighter's crew quarters. Tenzint had said nothing about the bloodshed in the observatory, and now said only, "I'll get us moving. Man probably needs more attention than we can give here."
"I can identify no internal injuries," the droid said. "I believe his interrogators saw value in preserving his life."
"You'd know," Quell said. Tenzint shrugged and sauntered into the access corridor, heading for the cockpit. She knelt by Aiden's side as the deck shuddered and the freighter lifted off. The droid injected him with a series of watery mixtures and subjected him to sonic pulses that had no obvious use, but caused the intelligence officer to groan in his sleep.
"His bio readings are stable,"
the droid eventually announced.
"He is malnourished and dehydrated, but his injuries are not life-threatening."
"I think they were all malnourished and dehydrated," Quell said. She wondered how long the Imperial unit had been on the run. Certainly the moon hadn't had much to offer in the way of supplies. The droid did not speak. Quell felt the freighter exit Narthex's atmosphere, felt its trembling even out, and heard the engine whine downshift to a groaning pulse as the vessel diverted power from heat shields to thrusters. Somewhere, a sealing bolt dropped onto deck plating. Even in its native era, the freighter had been nothing worth flying. A low-cost model for in-system hauls, barely cheaper than the more sophisticated models it had been built to imitate. It was a machine reliant on the ignorant and the desperate to earn its keep. She felt a certain kinship with it. Aiden made a sound not quite like words. She saw he was turning his head, and she fetched a pouch of water. She held it to his lips, started to tip it back, but he took it from her with shaking hands and managed to drink on his own. "Quell," he pronounced, as if testing the name. She wondered if he was aware of ITO hovering 3 meters away. "Yes," she said. Then a moment later, "You're safe." He didn't seem able to hold himself upright. He lay rigidly on the bunk's thin padding, voice ragged as he asked, "What happened to Kairos?" Her shoulders stiffened. It wasn't what she'd wanted to hear, though she couldn't have said what she did want. "She's alive. She's with the medics, but not awake." ITO floated behind her. Aiden's whole body began to tremble, as if in harmony with the droid's low humming. Then he stilled and whispered, eyes closed. "I didn't tell them. I didn't tell them about the mission. I told them about the Lodestar and the squadrons, but they never asked the right questions."
"The particulars can wait,"
ITO said.
"Rest."
Aiden looked as if he wanted to protest, but did not. They flew on. Quell remained at Aiden's side, watching him breathe, watching his antenna stalks gradually uncurl like arthritic limbs finally relaxing. She absently drank the rest of the water pouch and remembered to replenish it afterward. Eventually, Tenzint emerged from the cockpit, surveyed the room, and seemed satisfied, returning without any questions. Quell was surprised when she heard Aiden utter her name again. She thought he'd fallen asleep. "I'm here," she said. Aiden moistened his lips several times before he asked, clearer than anything else he'd said since his rescue, "How long has it been since they took me?" She gave it thought. "A week now. A week exactly." Aiden exhaled rapidly in either a cough or a laugh. "I'm sorry," he said. "I'm sorry." Quell had no idea what he meant, and he didn't speak again. 4. Two men escorted the black cylinder, one in front to guide its path, and one in back, steering the repulsor lift controls. Within the anti-gravity frame, the cylinder itself was unmarked, its surface flat, save a single panel the size of a human palm. Its edges gleamed like glass, but its surface was unreflective. It reminded Will Lark of images he'd seen of pallbearers ushering coffins into graves, the burial rites of strange cultures. The men were not pallbearers, however. They were healers, medics of the New Republic, and they deserved better than his cynicism. Go to them, he thought. Tell them of the cures of the Sun Lamas. But he banished that thought. He had nothing to share that would be of use. He hoped the specialists aboard the medical transport, Bright Vigil, would serve Kairos better when they arrived. The droids would tell Will nothing of her condition, other than that applying Bacta, the miracle fluid, capable of everything short of resurrection in 100 species, had failed, and that keener minds were required. The black cylinder was a suspension tube, meant to arrest Kairos' decay until she could be examined on Chandrilla, where the Bright Vigil was bound. May the Force be with you, Will whispered as the cylinder disappeared past a row of airspeeders. May your breath be the breath of the wind. He glanced about one last time, distantly hoping to spot Nath or Quell or Chass hurrying down the tarmac. But Nath and Quell were hunting for Aiden, and Chass was somewhere. Will was late. He heard an engine loud enough to shake the tarmac and ran until his breath felt like shrapnel and his underarms were soaked with sweat. He leapt onto the Lodestar's loading ramp moments before it began to retract. One of the engineers cursed at him in disapproval. Sergeant Boris, chief of the ground crews while Ragnell was on Troyth prepping the newly assigned fighter garrison, laughed uproariously.
You know, we're just moving into orbit, Boris called from across the bay. We're running shuttles to the planet 3 times daily.
If they catch me riding a shuttle, my squadron will never let me live it down, Will said.
He spared a smile for Boris, then turned to the boxy olive droid rolling his way. T5 belonged to Nath, but the churlish astromech rarely let Will pass without a friendly greeting. He let T5 babble a while and stopped to chat with Sergeant Yava Thine and her nestmate P'ai on his way out. He ran into 3 members of the Lodestar's bridge crew with whom he exchanged good wishes and news of the war. By the time he made it to his billet, he hadn't forgotten Kairos, but his mood had lifted considerably. The galaxy had reminded him that, even without his squadron, he wasn't entirely alone. As he sat on his cot, he saw that the message light on the console beside his bunk was blinking. He hit a key and checked the display and was surprised to see the sender designated as Cairn Aiden. The message proper was prefaced with a lengthy set of technical headers.
Secure, multi-sync type 7, encryption, time delay. Trigger, system login override, 170 standard hours, off. Level 5 to disable. Recipient list hidden.
Will puzzled over the codes and moved on to the opening text.
To be distributed in the event of the death or disappearance of Cairn Aiden concerning New Republic intelligence asset Irika Quell. He read on, feeling somehow that he should not.
Chapter 9. High velocity impacts on a pitted surface. 1. The freighter took 2 hours to reach Troyth on its voyage from Narthex, moving at a fraction of its top speed in order to avoid straining the wounded Cairn Aiden. Tenzin had argued briefly with ITO about just how carefully they needed to fly, but Quell recalled being moved to nausea by the shuddering deck plating and agreed that reducing velocity was wise. She had taken the co-pilot seat by the time they approached planetary orbit and was surprised to see a capital ship register on the sensors. Then she recalled the Lodestar's scheduled departure from the planet's surface.
"Hope you remembered to say goodbye to our friends below," Tenzin murmured.
"Why say goodbye when we'll always stay in touch?" Quell asked.
Her mother would have scolded her for the sarcasm, but Tenzin only laughed. She contacted the Lodestar and arranged for landing clearance. The flight officer hesitated when she gave her codes. Quell surmised that no one had registered the freighter with the battleship's crew, but hastened to grant permission once Tenzin chimed in and mentioned Aiden's presence.
"Sorry for the delay,"
the officer said after another pause.
"Mr. Lark asked to be notified as soon as you returned."
"Mr. Lark," Tenzin echoed.
He shook his head as they brought the freighter in. When the vessel had alighted, Quell led the way to the boarding ramp. ITO remained with Aiden, who still slept in the darkened crew quarters. The hangar was largely empty of Lodestar personnel, except for a ground crew refueling one of the Meteor Squadron X-Wings remaining after Syndulla's departure. Waiting at the base of the freighter's ramp, however, were Will Lark and Chasna Chattuck. Both wore civilian attire, which suggested to Quell that whatever was going on lacked real urgency. But Lark's expression was guarded, almost unthinkably so for the normally animated boy, while Chattuck stared toward Quell and Tenzint with fatigued eyes, drawing breaths that caused her chest to visibly rise and fall.
"What's the word?" Quell asked.
She saw the tension. She didn't understand it.
"How's Aiden?"
Lark asked.
"Stable," Quell said. "He'll need a medical team, but Ido thinks he'll recover."
Tenzin juddered a thumb toward the ship.
"It was exactly what you'd figure. Imp snabbed him. Says the plan's still on, though."
"Good," Lark said. "Good." Neither Lark nor Chattuck stepped aside when Quell reached the bottom of the boarding ramp. Quell glanced back at Tenzin, who shrugged and remained a meter behind her. She looked at Lark and waited. Chattuck uttered a syllable that Lark spoke over.
"We know about Operation Cinder," he said.
"Forget that,"
Chattuck spat. "We know about Necronus."
Quell flattened her expression, burying whatever reaction she'd begun to show. Her field of vision seemed to narrow, darkness encroaching around the edges.
"What about Necronus?"
she asked.
"I'm with her,"
Tenzin said. She heard his feet impact the deck as he hopped off the boarding ramp and stepped to one side, outside the field between Quell and the other two.
"What about Necronus?"
Lark seemed to struggle to look away from Quell. He did so only for an instant, glancing at Tenzin in acknowledgement before focusing on Quell again.
"She destroyed it," he said. "Way I recall,"
Tenzin replied, casual as a promise. "She tried to stop it." Chattuck snorted.
"Check your messages. Aiden rigged a file to go out in case he disappeared. Probably because he was afraid she'd shoot him in the head. She wiped out the whole damn planet and lied to us about it."
"Unless she didn't,"
Lark said.
"Unless there's another explanation."
All of them fell silent. Quell perceived an opportunity to answer, to explain away her crimes, to use words to suture the weeping wound in her squadron. She searched and found nothing. The opportunity was real, yet she lacked the spirit or mind to take advantage of it. The moment passed. She said nothing. Chattuck yelled,
"She did what the Death Star did! She killed a planet!"
Quell flinched and rocked on her heels. She didn't step back. Chattuck kept talking, her voice hoarser than usual, the hint of a lisp in her inflections.
"She smothered whatever million people in silt, crashed her ship, then pretended to be a defector. She offered to go after her old unit because she thought it would let her get away with it. She should be in prison."
Chattuck's head twitched, like she was impaling an insect on her horns.
"So should Aiden, probably. So should anyone who signed off on her running a squadron." "Aiden didn't know."
The voice was Quell's, and it took her by surprise. She comprehended the idiocy of her statement.
"General Syndulla didn't know.
Though maybe she does now."
"Aiden should rot,"
Chaddock cried. The whole corrupt New Republic can rot if this is how it treats mass murderers.
The Meteor Squadron ground crew was watching them now, no longer even feigning interest in the refueling operation. If Quell's shame hadn't been broadcast to the entire ship yet, there would be no stopping it now. She sought words and seemed to choke on her breath, managing only,
I left, though. I did leave.
That, too, was a lie by omission. Lark's expression remained frozen.
Are you still loyal to them?
He asked.
To Shadow Wing?
No,
Quell said. It sounded weak and confused.
What about at Pandem Nai? When we almost burned away the planet? Did that have anything to do with...
No,
she said again, not understanding what he meant, where the question had come from.
Did that have anything to do with Necronus? Lark tried again. Or with the lies? Or with Aiden?
No,
she said for a third time.
No.
The darkness at the edges of her vision was creeping inward. She thought about Pandem Nai, cringed at the memory, and found the confession she hoped Lark wanted.
It was just a stupid mistake. All of it was a stupid mistake.
Chaddock loosed a sound between a snarl and a laugh, twisting her head away. Lark breathed deeply and asked,
Including Necronus?
Yes,
Quell said. She heard Tenzin murmur Lark's name, but the boy didn't seem to hear. His voice broke as he asked,
What if it hadn't been Necronus? What if it had been Troyth? Or your homeworld?
I don't have a homeworld.
I grew up on Gavanna Orbital. You know that,
she thought. Though she recalled their dinner when Lark had claimed she had never talked about her family. He didn't wait for an answer. Quell barely heard him as he asked,
What if it had been Polinius?
His homeworld.
Necronus was the only target, she said. No one had even heard of it before the orders came.
Maybe,
Tenzin said, steadier than Lark or Chaddock or Quell.
You should tell us something about why you finally did defect. Aiden must have trusted your reasons, or at least the torture droid did.
Chaddock shot a glare in Tenzin's direction. Lark nodded slowly.
Hell, Tenzin continued. Your motive for jumping ship might have been purer than mine. We've all got our stories.
Quell recognized what he was attempting. He'd stepped in to save her once before, long ago, when Aiden had threatened to throw her out an airlock. Yet whatever Tenzin had learned about her, he didn't understand how abominably flawed her motives really had been. How it was Major Keyes' decision, not her own, that had saved her from living and dying in Shadow Wing. How she hadn't been strong enough to continue killing or to walk away. She gave her head a small shake. Tenzin stood watching, prompting her with a stare that became increasingly less subtle until he finally sighed and stepped around Lark and Chaddock, taking a place behind and between them.
Nothing to say then,
Tenzin looked between his two companions.
Sorry, Lieutenant. Silent isn't guilty, but it sure doesn't look good.
You should probably go to the brig,
Lark said softly.
Why?
Chaddock asked.
The New Republic is fine with it all. They'll probably have us arrested for reading Aiden's message.
Quell idly wondered about the recipients of Aiden's communique. Had he included Syndulla? Would the general come riding back from the Bormia sector, ready to take Quell away to face justice while expressing grave disappointment? More likely, Quell thought, she'd never see Syndulla again. The general would write her off as a mistake and abandon her like garbage jettisoned prior to a lightspeed jump.
You can summon security if you want,
she said. She reached for the blaster on her hip and spotted Lark tensing as her fingers curled around the grip. She lifted the weapon without bringing it into her palm and tossed it onto the deck, where it clattered loudly.
Not much point in fighting, is there?
Probably not, Tenzin agreed. We'll sort it all out and see how it looks tomorrow.
Quell was confident she knew how it would look. Her sins had caught up with her, and her life in the New Republic was over. The only question was whether anyone was so horrified by her actions, felt so personally aggrieved, that she could expect to be assassinated while in custody. She might well die in prison. She decided she wouldn't go down easily. She looked from Chaddock to Lark to Tenzint. She wondered how they would react if she said, "I'm sorry." "The plan will still work," Quill said instead. Then sirens began to wail, and no one was paying attention to Quill any longer. Two. Colonel Soren Keyes of the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing stood aboard the bridge of the Star Destroyer Edict and watched the whirling cerulean funnel of hyperspace rip away as reality reformed. The stars that fell into place beyond the viewport seemed strangely bright. He realized they were closer than he was accustomed to, thanks to the remarkable stellar density of the galactic deep core. And the experience as a whole was the opposite of what he had anticipated. The dark heart of Cerberon, the singularity at the center of the system, was visible even from the Edict's position, but it was not the most magnificent sight in the heavens.
"Scanners have locked onto the Eyrie," Still declared.
The former captain of the Allegiance stood proud beside Soren, as if command of the Edict were an honor. As if the Star Destroyer hadn't cannibalized his beloved vessel, and as if his crew were proven warriors instead of cadets. Soren admired Still's spirit and hoped his officers felt the same.
"Arrival coordinates are within tolerances. We are 30 seconds behind them."
"Good," Soren said. "Proceed with the plan. I'll expect updates beamed to my ship as long as possible."
"Understood,"
Still said. Soren surveyed the bridge once, observed the cadets intent upon their consoles, and Nenves, their instructor, pacing and barking commands, observed Still fixed in the center, like a mass around which all else orbited, observed the bright stars and the glimmer of planets and the Ares' burning ion trail. Not many days before, he would have heard muttering or been sneered at as a mere advisor to the people he loved. Godspeed, he thought, and did not say it aloud. He had given his people their mission. He had prepared them. For now, he could give nothing more. He marched into the turbo lift, counting down the seconds. He'd need to maintain a brisk pace to launch on schedule. There were 300 meters of unpowered, airless deck sections for him to traverse between the Star Destroyer's bridge and hangar. But he was already in his flight suit, and the rest of his squadron was in place. He adjusted his comm system and locked his helmet.
"Lieutenant Cedia,"
he said.
"Is everything set?"
"Yes, Colonel,"
the voice replied.
"Lieutenant Bagheer is with me. The programs have been loaded."
"I'm pleased."
Soren had chosen Cedia for the mission out of inspired boldness. He had chosen Bagheer as a counterweight. Cedia was new to him. A brilliant and dangerous pilot who had the potential for greatness, with proper tutelage. Bagheer was a mainstay of the 204th and utterly reliable. They would serve well as a pair.
"Await my arrival."
The lift doors opened, and he trotted along corridors lit by emergency lamps. He wondered for a moment whether his plan was the right one. If the calculations they'd received were accurate, an asteroid was whipping toward Troyth even now, unnoticed by the New Republic battle group. That asteroid had room enough to house the 204th's entire fighter complement. It could have permitted the wing to strike at Troyth from hiding, giving no time for alarms to be sounded or shields to be raised. He'd developed an entire strategy around asteroid CER-952B. It had been a good plan, but it had left too much to uncertainty. And it was a plan for a commander more dedicated to the fallen empire than to his unit. Soren Keyes hadn't come to Cerberon to reclaim it for the Galactic Emperor, or for Admiral Sloan's fleet, or out of some concept of ideological purity. He would plant no flags. He had come to strike a fatal blow to General Hera Syndulla, and to give Shadowwing the victory its pilots so dearly needed. Chapter 10. Starfighters Like Motes of Dust. 1. Quell stood frozen as the hangar, no longer empty, was flooded by a stream of pilots racing to their starfighters, engineers disconnecting cables, astromechs loading into X-wings. The sirens still screamed, though the piercing sound had been dulled by repetition. Lark had run to intercept one of the Meteor Squadron pilots. Chaddock stood in front of Quell, playing guard as if oblivious to the chaos around them. Quell's blaster still lay on the floor, abandoned. Quell wondered what the two of them looked like to everyone running about, silent and motionless as they were. Tenzint was several meters away, crouched in front of T5 and cupping his ear to hear his battered astromech's whistles. Presently, he cursed, spat on the deck, and turned to Quell and Chaddock.
Two Imperial ships just entered Cerberon space, he said. Star Destroyer and a cruiser carrier.
Blast, Chaddock muttered.
She didn't turn away from Quell. Quell grasped at the tactical situation through the fog in her mind, as if doing so could distract her from the horror caressing her soul. Her thoughts were slow and confused, but one by one, she envisioned the dots of warships and fighters on a system chart. Even with Vanguard Squadron and Syndulla's detachment gone, the New Republic had the advantage in a defensive battle.
We can hold Troyth, Quell said.
Lark returned to the group, eyes showing an alarm that his expression concealed.
Two ships, he said. A Star Destroyer and... Old news, Chaddock snapped.
T5 chirruped over the sirens again. Tenzint translated.
Star Destroyer just launched a TIE squadron. TIEs are escorting the cruiser carrier heading for Katandra. Destroyer's coming our way.
Quell stumbled towards shadows in the fog, attempting to register what she was hearing and update her mental map. Her brain spat an error message. It's over. You should have stayed at Traitor's Remorse.
They'll hit Katandra hard, she said. But even a Star Destroyer won't get through Troyth's shields. Shut up, Chaddock said.
Lark glanced toward the hangar doors and the invisible magnetic field as the first X-Wing roared free, its thrusters filling the chamber with the scent of burnt fuel.
We need to get out there, he said. If she's Katadra's exposed, imagine the damage those TIEs could do on a bombing run.
She stays, Chaddock said. Her boot heel stomped on the blaster, pulling it skittering away from Quell.
Agreed, Lark replied. That brings us to three, though, so we'll defer to Meteor Squadron for command.
Fair enough. Tenzint gestured at the astromech, which began rolling toward his Y-wing. He hesitated a moment, then followed at a trot.
I can help, Quell said.
She didn't know why. Maybe she wasn't ready to see her squadron die without her. Maybe after Kairos, that possibility seemed real. Chaddock wrinkled her nose and showed teeth.
I will shoot your skull hollow before I fly with you again.
Lark winced. Another starfighter exited the hangar, its wash rippling his hair.
You can't fly, he said. You'd only be a distraction.
He stared at Quell until she reluctantly nodded. Then he placed a hand on Chaddock's shoulder to guide her away.
She won't go anywhere,
he murmured to the Thelan.
We'll finish when we get back.
Chaddock swore softly, but followed Lark across the deck. Quell didn't move, didn't even think, as the last Meteor Squadron starfighters exited the hangar. A, Y, and B Wing went next. She felt the wake of hot air and blinked toxic particles from her eyes. Soon she could see straight across the nearly empty bay, over a floor littered with cabling and ladders and diagnostic tools. Her eyes fixed on the lone starfighter remaining, an X-Wing with the crest of Alphabet Squadron painted on its nose. It was the second ship she'd flown with that design, after the first had gone down with D6L. D6 also hadn't known about her crimes. She felt its memory chip on her breast. She saw the round dome of CB-9 protruding from the top of her X-Wing. She took long strides, moving as if on a conveyor beyond her control, and was beside the vessel in moments.
open the canopy, she ordered. They need us out there.
The astromech buzzed.
There's a Star Destroyer headed this way.
She heard impatience in her voice and tamped it down.
The Lodestar is undercrewed, and most of its defenders are heading to Katadra. This ship could use the extra help. Even one fighter could make a difference.
The droid buzzed again, low and angry, like a locked door, or a computer socket rejecting an incompatible plug. Quell slammed her palm against the side of her starfighter.
Open it!
The droid did not open the cockpit. She put her back against the vessel, watching the lights of Meteor and Alphabet Squadron recede into the distance, away from the Lodestar and off to war. Two. Alphabet Squadron, what remained of Alphabet Squadron, flew in a three-fighter wedge with Will Lark at the spear point, pursuing Meteor Squadron en route to Katadra. Will could have easily caught up with the X-Wings, but he would have needed to leave Nath and Chass behind.
Deceleration in 4 minutes, 10 seconds,
Meteor Leader called through the comm.
If the droids are right, we'll enter Katadra space about 30 seconds before that cruiser carrier shows up. It'll give us time to arrive and form up, but there's not much room for error.
Copy that,
Will said.
Has the carrier deployed its ties yet?
Just that escort from the Star Destroyer right now. Not a lot of weapons aboard a Quasar Fire-class carrier, either.
This attack could be a distraction,
Tenzin offered.
Ties hit civilian targets on Katadra while that Star Destroyer tries to crack Troy.
Will knew the next voice well. Meteor 4, a Rodian named Nehiro he'd enjoyed a hallway flirtation with for the past month.
One Star Destroyer won't do much against Troyth's shields. More likely to get torn apart by the orbital defenses.
You're all in the running for Admiral, all right?
Meteor Leader again.
Cut the chatter, though, or go to private channels. Lodestar knows what it's doing, and we've got a fight ahead.
The comm emitted the soft hiss of a dead frequency. Will adjusted his helmet. He'd been too rushed and distracted to switch to a proper flight suit, which meant he couldn't form an airtight seal and he'd be in trouble if he ran into oxygen problems, and tried to shut the image of Irika Quell standing dead-eyed and defiant out of his mind. Why hadn't she spoken up for herself? Why not confess her guilt or apologize for the lies? She'd simply stood there, the woman who destroyed Necronus and led Alphabet against her former comrades. Will had half hoped to hear her growl and rant and defend all she'd done as necessary for the preservation of order in the galaxy. That would have made things clearer. Or if not, if she could have asked for forgiveness. No, he thought. He didn't know if he could offer that. He'd never longed to be home more badly. He busied himself with procedure. He checked A-Wing subsystems he should have checked before departure, linked targeting systems with Chass and Nath in case they made a joint run against the cruiser carrier, adjusted power distribution between thrusters and deflectors and weapons and thrusters once again. He should have been thinking tactically, assessing ways that Alphabet could assist Meteor in the defense of Katadra. There was too much going on. He wasn't in command, anyway. The deep core sky blazed above and around him. The dimmer streak of the debris field swept across darkness on his port side. A river whirl, with its ultimate terminus inside the burning eye of the black hole. Will shifted in his harness, leaning forward and craning his neck so that he saw nothing of his console or the canopy frame. The infinite expanse of space calmed him. Eventually, however, his back grew stiff and he fell back into his seat. Meteor Squadron began decelerating as it approached Katadra. Will waited 40 seconds, closing a portion of the distance between Alphabet and Meteor before signaling his comrades to do the same. They were 2 minutes out from Katadran orbit when his comm activated again.
Will Lark.
The transmission was badly distorted, full of digital stuttering and static. Will couldn't determine whether the voice was male or female, let alone if he knew the speaker. The A-Wing's computer failed to identify a source, but it wasn't a general broadcast. Someone was wide-beaming a signal using Will's transponder codes.
Hello?
He said.
Will Locke?
The comm said again.
We've met before. We spoke in the Auradol cluster, and again over Pandem 9. You understand?
He did understand, and suddenly the galaxy seemed to compress around him. He was speaking to Blink.
I understand. What's going on?
What is this?
I don't have much time. You need to turn around and get back to Troyth. Do you hear me?
If Blink was communicating with him, that meant Shadow Wing was in Cerberon. It suggested that the cruiser carrier powering toward Katadra was the same cruiser carrier he'd encountered in Auradol. It meant Blink had received his messages, had heard his secret confessions. You never sent those messages. None of it made sense.
I hear you,
he began, and then a shock of pops and stutters erupted from his speakers. He recognized the familiar static of a jamming signal, but looked to his console to confirm. His scanner showed a flickering field of 100 marks, and his comm rig was flooded across the full frequency spectrum. He surveyed the darkness, saw the stars and debris and the black hole, saw the faint tails of Meteor Squadron approaching the bright thumbnail orb of Katadra. Nothing about the battlefield had changed, so far as he could tell. There was no hidden fleet sweeping into view. It was likely the Star Destroyer was sending the jamming signal then. The cruiser carrier wouldn't have the power to blanket so much of the system, but the massive battleship might. For whatever reason, is it just because of Blink? The Empire had chosen to isolate and silence Katadra and Troyth. The Imperial and New Republic forces would fight over the two worlds in parallel, each set of combatants unable to contact comrades elsewhere. Will adjusted his comm settings.
Lark to all New Republic ships. Shadow Wing is here. Repeat, Shadow Wing is here. The enemy is the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing.
He had no illusions that the transmission would break through. Blink had told him to return to Troyth. Will didn't know why. Couldn't know whether it indicated a respect born at Pandem Nye for Will personally, a desire to avert a disaster, an intention to defect, or something more foul. He imagined the outcomes, tried to remember the details of his prior exchange with Blink and what he knew about the pilot. Maybe it didn't matter if all his instincts told him to do something foolish. Meteor Squadron didn't need him. Troyth might. The Alphabet fighters had fallen out of computer-assisted formation when the jamming signal had severed their link. As Will put pressure on a rudder pedal and swung his ship around, he made a wide arc and lit his thrusters as bright as he could. The pressure crushed him against his seat, but with a lot of luck, Nath and Chass would see him against the dark, recognize that he was returning to Troyth, and follow. Will didn't believe in luck, but if such a thing existed, he was surely due his share. Three. Chass Nechatic felt sick. Her mouth was dry, moistened only by the occasional surge of bile. She'd managed to grab an emergency flight suit, but it was too loose and her whole body was covered in goosebumps from the cockpit's aggressive cooling systems. Her head throbbed. She hadn't slept more than 40 minutes in the past day. Then there was Irika Quell, the woman who'd betrayed her. Chass should have expected it would happen sometime, somehow. Quell had never really given her a reason to trust. So Chass had let herself be won over by the fact that Quell obviously liked her, ignoring all the warning signs and never questioning whether someday payment would come due. She'd slept in the woman's bunk, and this is what she got? Chass wasn't drunk anymore. But as she sat in her cockpit, breathing through her teeth and wincing at every jolt, she doubted she was fit to fly. The jamming signal hit as she decelerated toward Katadra. She muted the static screech and squinted at the chaos on her scanner. She was tempted to find something to cover the garbled and irritatingly bright screen, but she knew the difference between stupid and stupid. While her head was down, something flashed in the distance outside the canopy bubble, but whatever it was gone by the time she looked. Possibly the first volley of weapons fire, more likely some Cerberon debris floating past.
"How long till cruiser carrier intercept?" she mumbled. 90 seconds, sir. Get ready to attack."
Who needed a comm signal to know what Meteor Squadron would have been saying? She went half-heartedly digging for her music chips, wondering if there was anything in her repertoire that wouldn't make her feel sicker, and spotted a warning indicator. She furrowed her brow and confirmed the problem with the computer. How'd I end up low on fuel? But she knew the answer, and she began laughing softly. She'd returned from her jaunt to Winkers barely 4 hours earlier and had drained the B-Wing's reserves flying around the Cerberon system and back. She vaguely recalled a conversation in which she'd promised half her fuel supplies to pay off a bet, though that might have been a figment of her imagination. Either way, it didn't surprise her that the understaffed ground crew hadn't topped her off yet. It was just like being in the Rebellion again instead of the New Republic. Chas smiled crookedly, wearily, and flew on. She had enough fuel to make it to Katadra, and she had enough weapons to take down a cruiser carrier. She could win the whole battle herself if she had to. 4. Quell strolled through the Lodestar, past crew members hurrying to battle stations and droids locking down maintenance panels, feeling the shudder of the battleship as its engines surged in power and its thrusters maneuvered the vessel over Troith. No one had come to arrest her. No one seemed to notice her. Those who had learned of her betrayal first had already written her off as another Imperial prisoner. Others, she assumed, had yet to be informed. For the moment, she still had skills to offer. For reasons she couldn't fully understand, she wanted to do her part in the battle. When she reached the bridge, she stepped out of the lift and out of the way, observing from beside one of the rear vehicular deployment stations, unused, she suspected, since the Clone Wars. The crew chatter was almost deafening, loose and undisciplined to her sensibilities, and the narrow lanes and control pits were crowded with junior officers. When she sought information from the main displays, she found only blank tactical maps and images of Troith. It wasn't until she saw a young ensign sketching approach vectors with a droid that she realized what was going on, and the indecipherable chatter began to make sense. The Star Destroyer was jamming scanners and communications, which left the Lodestar reliant on visual sensors only. The crowd was made up of comscan experts and runners and junior officers relaying information to the tactical center, all trying to plot enemy positions based on best guesses and estimated trajectories. Someone shot a hand up near the weapons station.
"Destroyer is 5 minutes out," the hand called.
"Have they deployed their fighters yet?"
The crowd shifted at the voice, opening a passage from the weapons station to the center of the bridge, where Captain Gigi Nivik, a frail Osiok whose feathers had thinned to downy patches with advanced age, stood. His voice was thin and reedy, yet somehow still carried.
"Not yet, except the Katadrin contingent," another officer called. "It's possible they're concerned about the destroyer outpacing the squadrons. They'll deploy fast once they begin."
140 seconds to release the entire wing, minus the time for the squadron escorting the cruiser carrier. She mouthed the words, but didn't say them aloud. There was no guarantee of a full complement, either. Everything had changed after Endor, and the presence of bombers and interceptors would alter the timing, too.
"Shall we attempt to close, sir?"
This from a woman at the nav station.
"If we intercept before they reach Troith, we can prevent the ties from moving against the planet."
"We would also be out of range of Troith's defenses," Captain Gigi Nivik said.
He scratched his gullet with short, chipped talons.
"Better to sit and wait? Better to sit and wait and fight?"
Quell didn't know the captain well. General Syndulla had expressed her fondness for him to Quell, but Quell had never spoken to him directly. She wasn't entirely sure he would recognize her on sight, which would be to her advantage if Aiden's revelations had reached him, and an impediment otherwise.
"Whoever's commanding that destroyer isn't a fool," she said.
She stepped out of her corner, shouldering her way through the crowd with sharp, brittle joints.
"He's got to know about Troyth's defenses, which means if he's closing, he's doing it for a reason."
The captain twisted his neck 90 degrees without rotating his body. One pupil contracted as he focused on Quell.
"How do we know he's not a fool,
She heard one of the bridge crew muttering her name into a comlink. Someone who had been informed about her? She remembered Lark's request to the bridge that he be notified when she landed, and wondered if he'd said anything more.
"He's survived all these months since Endor. He can't be a fool," she said.
She smiled mirthlessly.
"He could be suicidal, but not a fool. The longer we wait, the more we allow him to set the terms of approach."
The
captain twisted his neck to face the nav station again. His beak opened and closed several times before he finished.
"Agree. Take us out, Lieutenant. I doubt Troyth's shields will collapse easily, but I'd rather not risk the destroyer concentrating fire and punching through to the city. One block destroyed could mean millions lost."
That too, Quell thought, and shrugged away the shame that crept over her. The deck juddered more fiercely as the Lodestar left orbit.
"To these coordinates," the captain said, gesturing at one of the tactical maps.
"If required, we can retreat back to Troyth and gain the assistance of the planetary defenses."
It was a good plan, Quell thought, a prudent plan, though there were no guarantees in war. The crew resumed plotting, now attempting to calculate an intercept course to reach an enemy whose trajectory they couldn't map with certainty. With scanners still down, point defense turrets were repurposed as scopes to watch in all directions for approaching ships. Someone announced that, if previous estimates held true, the cruiser carrier had engaged Meteor Squadron over Katadra. A few seconds later, another crew member called.
"Troyth starfighters are in the air, coming our way."
Quell frowned, trying to remember how many fighters Syndulla had left behind as a planetary garrison. Certainly not many.
"And two allied ships incoming from Katadra, an A-wing and a Y-wing."
The captain snuffled in curiosity, but asked no questions. Nath Tenzant and Will Lark, Quill thought. She parted her lips to speak to the captain, but wasn't sure what to say. Something about the battle was strange. Everything about the battle was strange. What was she missing? Five. Everything goes according to plan, Sauron thought, but then everything always does at the beginning. His TIE fighter led the squadron through the Ares wake, his engine's comforting scream resonating through the craft's frame. Cold air circulated through his helmet's oxygen dispenser and condensed moisture in his nostrils. He smelled a faint odor of mildew. He'd forgotten to sanitize the tubes after his last flight. Before Devon, he'd never forgotten anything so routine. Then again, maybe Devon didn't deserve the blame. It was Colonel Soren Keyes who'd become distracted. With the Edict's jammers at full power, he was limited to optical communications. The 9 training drones operating in sync behind him were programmed to follow his engine trail and receive orders by blaster cannon burst pattern. Once the battle began, there was a risk they would become separated as their combat programming took precedence. The computers would still be able to identify Soren as the squadron commander, but only if his ship moved through their field of vision. Lieutenants Cedia and Bregeer, on loan from their respective squadrons, would be necessary to herd the machines into position once the chaos began. They were good soldiers, both of them. Bregeer hadn't hesitated when Soren had warned him that the mission was very likely to end in his death. Cedia had paused, but had asked no questions. She reminded him of Erica Quell that way. The pale orb of Katadra grew large past the wedge of the Airy. He scanned the darkness encircling the planet, trying to pick out the glimmer of New Republic reinforcements en route from Troy. Before activating the jamming signal, the Airy crew had transmitted estimated enemy arrival time and vector, and Soren processed the data through his targeting computer to narrow his search. He recalled stories from his childhood about ancient astronomers marking off sections of sky with their telescopes as they hunted planets and stars and comets. "Enjoy flying without scanners or comms," he told himself. "Enjoy the peace before the battle. This is the only reprieve you'll get." He almost laughed. The idea appealed, but meditative reflection wasn't easy to come by. He spotted the flash he was looking for, a faint glimmer in the target sector, and gently steered his tie toward it while the Airy made for Katadra. He brought up the view from the rear recorder cam on his console, noted with approval that the drones were maintaining formation and increased speed. It had been some time since he'd needed to calculate distance visually, but he guessed he had half a minute before reaching the enemy position. There was a great deal at stake, yet Soren Keyes, ace of aces, had learned after many years how to let the fear of death and failure and responsibility wash off his body and atomize in the stellar radiation of deep space. A lesson he'd often tried to impart to his officers, with varying degrees of success. Gradually, he relaxed in his seat. He gripped his control yoke in one hand while the other rested at his side. "The orders have all been given. You are no longer a commander. You're merely a soldier, and you know how to fight." The thought was unexpectedly pleasing. The enemy came into view, not even a full squadron, which was unexpected, and suggested three possibilities. The enemy was lying in wait, preparing an ambush somewhere. General Syndulla's battle group had reduced the size of its fighter complement since Pandem Nigh, or the general had retained more resources to protect Troyth than anticipated. The last could pose a problem. But if adjustments needed to be made, he would adjust. The specks of enemy starfighters became burning sparks, then grew rapidly until he could make out the familiar profiles of X-wings, strike foils spread. They'd seen him and were preparing to break and flank his squadron. He angled to starboard, trusting that the drones would follow, and set course to pass the enemy X-wings at a tangent. Had his foes possessed functional scanners or communications, he might have chosen otherwise. But their reactions were uncoordinated, not clumsy, not undisciplined, but imperfect and imprecise. As Soren skirted the enemy formation, he saw the light-speed swift indecision of the nearest fighter as the pilot debated whether to move against Soren or split away. Soren recognized his opportunity. He ignited thrusters, powered up repulsors, and he felt the crush of G-forces as his tie turned 90 degrees. He squeezed his cannon trigger, releasing a burst that tore into the enemy X-wing, the Nova that followed, that burned a cyan splotch into his vision, assured him that the foe had been destroyed even as he dived. The battle was joined. 4 seconds later, he earned his second kill. For the first time in months, he had truly returned to the fray. Chapter 11, Behemoths Dancing Like Planets. 1. Nath Tenzin watched the two battleships arc toward one point, each vessel the shape of a dagger, and each powerful enough to polish the surface of a moon. Space distorted all scale, and the Lodestar, positioned so that Nath could see only its narrow edge, seemed little smaller than the massive Star Destroyer stacked with command modules and deflector globes. Yet only one of the ships could be numbered among the most technologically advanced weapons in the galaxy. Nath watched the faraway exhaust trails of missiles tearing out of the destroyer, moving at incomprehensible speeds across the gap between the vessels. He worried the fight would be a lopsided one. But that wasn't his biggest concern. He was thinking about Will's last message. T5 had somehow picked up Will's signal through the jamming field, the droid was more talented than Nath liked to give it credit for. And after Nath had spotted the boy's course change and followed him away from Katadra, T5 had worked furiously to decipher the garbled transmission. Halfway back to the Lodestar, Nath had heard the words, "Shadow Wing is here." They didn't explain what Will was planning, if Will was planning anything, or why the boy had decided to leave Meteor Squadron and Chass to return to Troyth. Nath didn't understand how Will knew or what the implications were. Shadow Wing wasn't supposed to arrive for days. So had Aiden spilled his guts and revealed the trap after all? Had Shadow Wing come, taken a look at asteroid CER-952B, and decided, "This looks suspicious, let's just fight"? The whole idea had been to avoid facing Shadow Wing in ship-to-ship combat. Alphabet had held its own at Pandem Nigh, but this felt too much like the first time Nath had encountered the 204th at Trenchin Novu. The time they'd ambushed him and slaughtered Rika and Mordo and Piter and the rest of his squadron. It wasn't an outcome he cared to see twice. The Lodestar and the Star Destroyer now dominated his field of vision, each ship loosing turbo laser salvos as it passed alongside the other. The battleships hadn't reached optimal firing range, the emerald laser streams did little damage through the vessel's screens, and neither ship had brought point defense weaponry into play. But that wouldn't matter if Nath and Will got between the behemoths. What an Acclimator class could shrug off could disintegrate a starfighter. He shouldn't have been surprised. Will was heading straight into the cataclysm. Nath cursed, slammed a fist against a panel slowly rattling itself loose, and considered his options. Whatever was going on, he didn't have enough information to make a plan. Even loaded with ordnance, he didn't have enough ship to make a difference in battle. T5 was shouting warnings and the jamming field was still active.
"Tenzin to Lodestar,"
he called anyway, thumbing the comm.
"Shadow Wing is here. Repeat, Shadow Wing is part of the enemy force."
But T5 had been lucky to catch Will's signal from half a click away in a non-combat situation. With radiation flooding the area from the particle blasts and active deflectors, there wasn't a blasted hope that the Lodestar would catch his message. And though Nath was loath to admit it, Quell was the person he trusted most to figure what Shadow Wing was up to. He wasn't sure where her brain was at after she'd had her secret exposed, but he needed a way to contact her.
"All right,"
he said, and growled as his aging ship shuddered under his aging bottom.
"Get ready, droid. We're going to try something idiotic."
"Places is he doing?"
Quell wasn't sure which of the two dozen officers crowding the bridge had spoken, but whoever it was spoke for them all. Shortly after the Lodestar had exchanged its first volley with the Star Destroyer, Lark and Tenzin's approaching vessels had veered onto different trajectories. While Lark had gone weaving between particle blasts and begun shooting down enemy missiles, Tenzin had closed distance with the Lodestar and was now skirting the battleship's surface with barely 2 meters of clearance. The scanners were still inoperable, but the cams had tracked him until he'd swept dramatically over the bridge viewport, firing his dual laser cannons 3 times into the void. It was a stunt and a dangerous one. Tenzin was staying well away from the incoming particle fire, but if the Lodestar shifted unpredictably, Tenzin's Y-Wing would be dashed against the hull. And for all his bluster, Tenzin wasn't a man prone to pointless stunts. He had a very good reason for what he was doing. So what was it? Captain Gigi Nivik was crying out orders as the Lodestar completed one pass and began another, sweeping closer to the Star Destroyer. He'd ordered his comm scan officer to find a way to cut through the jamming and contact the Y-Wing, but Quell had been among the rebels long enough to recognize rebel thinking. Always attempt the impossible, hoping you would somehow succeed. It was a fine ideal, but a wasteful plan. She edged over to one of the monitor stations and adjusted the controls. A panel barely the size of her palm, intended for internal security monitoring, or hull temperature readings, flickered and showed Tenzin's Y-Wing as he continued racing across the Lodestar. Again, he fired into nothingness, this time as he passed the forward observation deck. Again, it was three shots, a burst from both cannons, a pause, then two more bursts. It was the same timing as the first shots, down to the second. The cannon fire was the message then. Quell dredged the depths of her mind for Imperial codes, Rebel codes, means of translating ones and twos into letters or signals. She thought about the system she'd created for Kairos to communicate with the rest of the squadron. She tried not to think about Kairos. She concocted a dozen possible interpretations of the message, and none of them rang true. Tenzin moved away from the Lodestar and out of the field of fire. Quell replayed the recording. Then she saw it. Not one blast followed by two. Two particle bolts, one from each of two cannons, then a pause, then four bolts. 204. She straightened, bracing herself on the console as vertigo sought to send her tumbling. The reprieve she'd found from the day's nightmare in tactical analysis and amateur cryptography was past, and the turn of events that had begun in the hangar seemed to crush her ribs, force out her breath. She drifted through the bridge anyway, crossing toward the captain. "It's Shadow Wing," she called. "Tenzin is telling us it's Shadow Wing." Captain Giggy Nivik peered at her, beak hanging open dumbly. She stared back, waiting for a question. What does that mean? Or how do you know? Or even, how do we fight them? Instead, he said, "If that's Shadow Wing out there, then where are the TIE fighters?" Quell had no answer. Three. What does Blink want? The thought echoed in Will's mind, recurring like the chorus of one of Chass's songs. His A-wing dipped and looped around turbo laser volleys bright as suns. He spun and raced between the land that was the Lodestar and the sky that was the destroyer. He channeled power from deflectors to thrusters until he felt lightheaded from the G-forces. He watched the telltale exhaust trails of the destroyer's missiles and followed them, squeezing his trigger despite the numbness in his fingers and pulling up fast as he could when the warheads detonated beneath him. Through it all, he thought of Blink and the Shadow Wing pilot's message. "You need to turn around and get back to Troyth." What did Shadow Wing intend? Whose side was Blink on? What does Blink want? He'd chosen to defend the Lodestar because he had nothing else to do. There were no orders forthcoming through the jamming field, but protecting lives was never a mistake. He could do that much. And when the missiles stopped coming, as they would soon, when the Lodestar and the Star Destroyer clashed with energy weapons alone, or when the Destroyer finally unleashed its ties, would he know what to do then? What does Blink want? Was Blink aboard the Destroyer? The brilliance of the turbo laser volleys faded as the two battleships completed one pass and reoriented for another. Will steadied his breathing, tensed and relaxed his muscles, then stroked the console as he scanned the darkness. He spotted a glimmer he expected was Nath, but then saw another glimmer behind it and a third, all coming from the direction of Troy. The planetary garrison had arrived. Will swung his ship wide and spotted the crisper profile of Nath's Y-Wing, intact and unscarred. Will took comfort in the man's survival, but most likely, Nath was looking to Will for direction. "All right," Will murmured. "All right, we're going back in. We promised to protect them, to see the war through to the end. And we'll do it." He opened his throttle and pitched upward, flipping and spinning, until the Star Destroyer was centered in his view. Four. The TIE pilots weren't good, but they were smarter than most. It wasn't just the pounding in Chass's head that made them seem competent either. Even outnumbered, they were putting up a decent fight against the X-Wings of Meteor Squadron, using superior speed and maneuverability to break apart New Republic flights and isolate individual opponents. For every tie that went down, and Chess had taken out two herself, assisted with two anyway, by strafing the battlefield with all guns alight, an X-Wing was torn up alongside. She swore as the tie wave crested again, filling the gaps between her ship and the nearest meteor craft. She squeezed off a shot, then loosened her grip on her trigger. Without scanners, deep in the melee, she was as likely to hit friend as foe. One tie nearly sheared off her port ion cannon as it passed. Another seemed to defy all laws of inertia, making lateral leaps to blast at one X-Wing, then another. Particle bolts splashed against Chass's nearly extinguished deflectors. With a groan, she rotated her foils to try to throw off enemy targeting and dived out of the worst of the fracas, hoping she didn't pull a tie on her tail. A lilting, unaccompanied voice sang discovery and delight through her speakers. Chass growled and kicked her console. She wasn't in the mood. Light spilled over her shoulders as a fighter exploded behind her. Probably a tie. Maybe a tie. She wished for once that she could talk to Will or Nath, or even Quell. The TIE pilots were mostly rotten technical flyers, yet still made the right moves. She'd spotted one of the enemy ships claim multiple kills and wondered if that was the foe's weak point. If one pilot was carrying a unit full of morons. But she couldn't track any single ship through the jamming field to be sure. Three warning indicators lit on her console. One immediately winked out, rear deflector screens were trashed. One stayed steady, fuel reserves creeping toward zero, and one Chass scrambled to fix. Starboard foil distributor was running alarmingly hot. Her ship had seen better days. Maybe none of it mattered. Troyth and the Lodestar would take down the Star Destroyer, and Katadra... Maybe Katadra was where Will and Nath had gone. She was pulling up, orienting herself to return to the battle and swallowing bile when she spotted the cruiser carrier. It had continued on its course toward Katadra when the fighters had split off to intercept Meteor, but it appeared in no danger of entering atmosphere. Instead, its thrusters burned bright and its path would take it past the planet toward the Cerberon debris field. Chass looked above her and saw the ongoing explosive furball like a fireworks display. "You all have fun. You don't need a bomber to protect, so I'm taking the carrier," she said, realizing a moment later that she'd failed to thumb the comm controls. "You really are too much of a mess to fly," she thought, but it didn't matter. She settled back, diverted power to her thrusters, and pushed the B-Wing in pursuit of the cruiser carrier. Starlight reflected faintly off Katadra, gently caressing her cockpit with blues and greens. The music changed to a crypto-symphonic house jam using an old Carillion folk tune as a baseline. Chass grudgingly approved and rocked to the beat as she leaned forward in her harness, trying to get a better look at her target. A sense of familiarity hit her, as if she'd lived through the fight before. Rocketed after the same cruiser carrier and blasted it in a tree. She swiveled her head, reassessed the situation in confusion, then allowed her eyes to alight again on the carrier. She recognized the shattered hull plates over its engines. She recognized the missing turrets and the heat-accelerated discoloration. She knew this ship. She'd bombed it in the Auradol cluster and found it again over